Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Fassini, represented by CLNS Media. Today on the show, Cole Zwicker is here. We got a gift from the gods right before we were about to start recording. Magic Johnson decided to give us his list of his 60 favorite movies ever. And it is just beautiful. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Nike Basketball Academy, which I was at this past week / weekend out here in Southern California. We're going to talk about Michael Porter Jr. making just a wild decision earlier on Snapchat. And I don't know. I'm sure that we'll bounce around from there. Cole, what's going on, man?
Yeah, it was kind of a laid-back day, and all of a sudden, we just got some gems. So this is definitely the down part of the offseason as far as content, and Magic Johnson in particular is helping us out with that.
Magic Johnson is a savior. I just want to... So he decides, in honor of my 60th birthday tomorrow, I put together a few lists of top favorites. First up, top 60 films. So he puts The Godfather at number one. Totally reasonable, right? Then... he proceeds to list them in alphabetical order with some exceptions, and it ends with Triple X, which I presume is the movie that Vin Diesel stars in, where that was made at the height of the action sports craze. I just want to ask you, where do you want to go with the beauty of the Magic Johnson list?
How much money do you have to put triple X on your top 60 list? It's just such it's like an all-time flex to me. Like, there's no way that movie would be in like my top 500, and nobody else can get away with doing that. Like, you can't. But I've seen that movie like three times. There's no regular human being can put triple X on your top 60 and not just get destroyed. And that's what makes this list so beautiful. Is like, legitimately, I was stunned when I saw that in this list. Like, I got the 57. It's like Top Gun. Okay, here we go. Good list. I don't really care about the rest. And you look at Triple X, you're like, literally, what the fuck?
Yeah, we've got some just beauties here. And then additionally, in number 31, he places The Bourne Identity, which is very clearly like out of alphabetical order. My theory on this is that he thought the movie was called The Jason Bourne Identity.
Oh my God.
Because it fits with the J-A there. Like, the reason that it's not like Identity, The Bourne is because he has Iron Man at 30. So if the word, he thought the first word was Identity, he would have had it ahead of Iron Man. I think that he thought it was Jason Bourne or the Jason Bourne Identity or the Jason Bourne movies, put it there, and then decided just not to move it because fuck it. This is a great list.
No, absolutely. That was a great catch. I completely glossed over that. 47, Rush Hour. It's a really strong choice. I'm really glad he put Rush Hour in this. Not something I would probably put in my top 60, but I love that movie. So that one stands out to me.
Yeah, the fact that Sparkle is also out of place throws me. I have never seen Sparkle, so I don't know. I don't know what the move is there.
Okay, so what do we feel about Bad Boys, the original, over Bad Boys 2? Because this one was kind of... I went up in arms about this one.
I'm going to be honest with you. I am not the biggest fan of the Bad Boys movies. They're fine. Like, don't get me wrong. If it's on TNT, like back when I had cable, I would be like, okay, sure, I'll toss it on. But like, I could go the rest of my life without seeing a Bad Boys movie.
Yeah, I feel you there. I like him. I'm much more preferential to the second one. I was kind of curious that he included the first, but that seemed to be kind of the going trend here, is including the first one in a series when he could. But I enjoyed that.
My man is going full, I am a 60-year-old rich person, by tossing Green Book on here. So that was nice. It's a beautiful list. It is, honestly, there's some good underrated ones, like A Bronx Tale is on here. Underrated movie. We've got, let's go to the second page here. Love and Basketball, I think, is a, you know, really underrated movie. Rush Hour, really great movie. Not in my top 60, like you said, but excellent. Top Gun, I think, is going to be a controversial move in the top 60. I really do. Top Gun, you're the resident Top Gun expert, so give me the take as to why it should be.
I mean, just I actually watched that again the other night, so I'm not the most unbiased source here. I just think it was kind of a classic, and it's timeless. Like, you can watch it, I can watch it like routinely. Like, I've seen it like 6-7 times now, and it never gets old for me. So it's just one of those movies that stands out, I would assume, relative to the age as well. I mean, obviously, I was like, you know, I wasn't even born when it came out, but it's something that I always go back to. It seems to be kind of a generational thing, where even like my father would watch that as well. And it's just, I don't know. Like the other day, I was on the Lake Washington. We were like viewing all of these, like, we have this Seafair Festival or something, and we had like the Blue Angels fly overhead and stuff like that. And like, somebody just literally rolled up to like a boat party of like 120 boats, like blaring Top Gun, like blaring Danger Zone. And it's like, this is why this movie is the fucking shit.
I love that. That is a party right there. I mean, you're talking to someone who is like, I've seen something like, I don't even know, man. It's got to be nearing 100 movies that I've never seen before this year. And I keep a list of them all. Wow. I don't rank them in terms of like where I have them in comparison to one another overall, but I do give them all letter grade and have them in like the order of the letter grade within my list. So as someone who is like that obsessive about movies, I am here for Magic Johnson creating his own top 60 list. I think that is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm nowhere near that level of movie buff. I just go for entertainment for the most part. Like, really good movies always stand out and stuff. Like, I rewatched Inglourious Basterds the other night, and I was Jesus, great. This is great. It's so good.
Yeah, Inglourious Basterds, I think, is, I got in this conversation on Twitter after Once Upon a Time in Hollywood came out, but I think Inglourious Basterds is like very clearly in Tarantino's top two. To me, it's like Pulp Fiction and Inglourious Basterds. It's not like Pulp Fiction then Inglourious Basterds. Like, they are 1A and 1B to me. I think they're both just exceptional.
I got to see Pulp Fiction again. Honestly, I don't think I've seen that in over a decade, so I got to go back and watch that.
It's just as good as what you remember it. It all holds up. Like, just the conversational nature of it, the vignette nature of it, it all just holds up so beautifully. Have you seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood yet?
No, I'm really bummed. I instead saw Lion King, and that was a tragic mistake on my part. That was just a total nightmare. So I'm going to go see that probably, I want to say, this weekend.
Yeah, that's behind John Wick 3 and Booksmart. That is, for me, the third best movie of 2019 so far that I've seen. And I've seen most of the big releases this year. Like, there are a few that I'm missing, but for the most part, I've gotten to see them all. And yeah, it's really, really good. They're both just, it's slow and drags in parts, but like, there are scenes within it that hold up with like the absolute best of Tarantino.
That's awesome. You're the kind of guy that like goes to premieres, right? Like, you go to like the night of. But you do. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I will. Like, I did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood Thursday night. I did. We did Midsummer the Friday that it came out. Avengers was a Thursday night viewing. John Wick was a Thursday night viewing. Us was a Friday. During the NCAA tournament, I actually skipped out on Friday of the NCAA tournament during the day to go see Us. That's how committed I am to this premiere movie life.
That's an incredible flex by you there with the tournament. So yeah, I can't remember the last time I've seen the premiere like the night of. It might go back to like maybe senior year of high school or something. It's been a while.
Yeah, like, I saw Stuber the week that it came out on the Friday. That's where we're at. We saw Dark Phoenix the night that it came out. That was a mistake. yeah, we're Laura and I are about that movie life. Child's Play, we saw that the week that it came out. Yeah, it's just like something for us to do. Like, we live in the middle of Hollywood. We're within like 3 miles of, like, for instance, the Chinese Theater and this really good, like, art, not even art house, because it shows movies like John Wick and stuff like that, but theater that gets, you know, independent releases. We're very close to the Grove, which has a really great movie theater. So it's just very easy. We're very close to, like, Universal Studio, that theater up at City Walk. So, like, it's just so easy for us to go to movies. And now that AMC Stubs exists, like, you know, I think the count that we're up to now is, like, we've seen 24 movies in theaters this year or something like
wow.
that.
That's freaking impressive, dude. Like, honestly, I think I'm at like 5, maybe.
Yeah, like, the AMC Stubs thing is just clutch in every way. It is so, so valuable. Like, it might be the most valuable thing on, like, a monetary basis in Laura and I's life. It's either that or the Nespresso machine.
There you go, man.
All right, let's get rid of Magic Johnson's list, and let's jump into Nike Basketball Academy. So I was at Nike Basketball Academy this weekend. I got a chance to see a lot of really, really talented players, led probably by Cole Anthony, I would say, is he was the main attraction, so to speak. And then from there, I also got to see a bunch of guys like Obi Toppin, who played really well, and Khalil Whitney, who was better than I expected, and Yudoka Azubuike. Yudoka Azubuike now has a six-pack. I am just full-on calling that out. It is ridiculous how good a shape that guy is in starting this season. So I am excited to talk about this with you as someone who is not there, because I think that you'll be able to maybe give us the non-small sample size look.
Yeah, I can try to do that for most of these guys. Some of the incoming freshmen I haven't seen a lot of tape of yet, but I think I have a gist of most of these guys.
Yeah, and of course this event as well, it's one where you also get to see high school kids, and I just have to start with, like, the best story from Nike Basketball Academy. I tweeted it out. Rasheed Wallace is one of the coaches at Nike Basketball Academy, right? He was there last year. I got told that I didn't go last year. For whatever reason, they were, like, weird about media going in. But I got told last year he got kicked out of a game for, like, arguing with the referees, which, of course, right? Rasheed Wallace does that. But seriously, in this, like, it was Friday at Nike Basketball Academy. He's coaching a team with Imani Bates and Paolo Banchero and all of these really high-level players. Patrick Baldwin was on his team. And he is, like, leaning on the refs, talking to them, chirping them constantly at an academy event, like, where these kids are there. And he's, like, working the refs like it's Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals against the Lakers. It's unbelievable. It was awesome. It was so cool to watch.
That's the kind of hustle I'm here for. So good on Sheed there.
Yeah, like, he just got a job recently as a high school coach. He is going to be an exceptional high school coach. Like, he legit gives such a shit about these kids and gives such a shit about being,
that's awesome,
like, giving back. Like, he has $100 million. Like, he doesn't need to be doing this. But, like, he genuinely seems like he has the attitude where he wants to give back and wants to, like, make these kids the absolute best he can be or they can be. It was genuinely, like, very, very impressive to me. And it's not that I didn't have respect for Rasheed Wallace ahead of time, but, like, being close to him, like, seeing him in person, seeing the way he interacted with the kids. He was, like, kind of shit-talking kids on the other team, too. I gained an immense amount of respect for Rasheed Wallace just for the amount that he cares about it.
Yeah, and Rasheed has fringe put triple X on your top 60 list money. So, like, he's definitely sitting well. I've always been a fan of him. Like, he's always been entertaining. It's good to hear, like, he actually gives a shit. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, like, it's not that he's there for the wrong reasons. He's there to legit help kids. And, like, I mean, Rasheed Wallace has he can be a producer on Triple X money, like, if he wants to. And here he is, like, coaching high school kids and being all about it. Like, he made $158 million in his career. And, look, I don't know what Rashid's spending habits were necessarily. But, like, it was great. It was really, really great to see him be the kind of person that helps these kids and, like, does a great job of it. And, like, I'm not going to name names, but, like, during some portions of the event, you could see some of the other coaches start to, like, glaze over and then, like, walk over and, like, start to have conversations with parents and stuff like that, or, like, people around the NBA scouts that they knew. That shit wasn't flying with Rashid. He was just there to be about the kids. It was great.
Yeah, it's awesome, man.
So let's talk about the kids. So I'll give you the rundown on the college kids that were in attendance. We've got Cole Anthony, Kira Lewis, Scotty Lewis, Oshae Agbaji, Peyton Pritchard, Antoine Davis, who I actually didn't get to see. I'm not sure what happened there. Tyrese Halliburton, Bryce Aiken, Khalil Whitney, Cassius Winston, Joel Ntombwe, Desmond Bain, Jay Scrubb, Charles Bassey, Tyler Bay, Mamadi Diakite, Tanner Ngom, Trace Tinkle, Stephen Enoch, Reggie Perry, Sadiq Bey, Obi Toppin, Yudoka Azubuike, and Killian Tilly. We're going to start with Cole Anthony, and then I'll kind of let you jump around to who you want to talk about. But sure. Is there anyone other than Cole who really stands out to you there?
Look at that. I mean, all these names are known. Like, we've seen Halliburton a lot. He played in FIBA. Charles Bassey has had his fans. We are not as high on him on this podcast. Killian Tilly, everybody knows the story with him.
I will say this about that. We'll talk about him a little bit more, but he was not very good at this event.
Okay. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. And Obi Toppin is someone we should definitely get to, because I know he has some fans in the draft community, just guys that have seen him in Dayton and have some intrigue there. I have some thoughts. I've watched a little bit of his film. I've seen like two or three games about 3 weeks ago, but we should definitely start with Cole, just because I think that's where you kind of have to start this draft conversation.
Yeah, Cole Anthony is a guy that I think is pretty, I don't know if I want to say universally, but at this stage, he is considered to be a likely top, I would say, 3 or 4 pick in this upcoming NBA draft. It's him, it's James Wiseman, it's Anthony Edwards. You know, some people will throw a couple other names at you, like Denny Avdija, Teo Maledon. There are other guys that are internationals that I think are interesting, even a couple other high school kids like Isaiah Stewart that are pretty interesting. But for the most part, the consensus going into this event was that Cole Anthony, James Wiseman, and Anthony Edwards are the top tier. Would you disagree with that assessment?
Not as it refers to Cole. Like, I think Cole right now is my number one guy. I'm always reluctant to do tiers this early just because I don't have like a great feel, but Cole's definitely my number one. I think I would probably put Anthony Edwards in that tier as well, even though I kind of go back and forth on that. He's just really young. There's a lot of athletic speed to power upside. We can talk about that in the future, but I think it would be those two guys maybe in the top tier. I'm not as high on Wiseman from my sample, but Cole's definitely one for me, like, right now, until somebody has to knock him out of that spot for me to move on him.
So here's what I would say about Wiseman right now, and I'm sure we'll get more into the weeds on Wiseman as the season gets closer. But with James Wiseman, I was someone who, when I went back and watched a bunch of tape and had seen him live previously to this spring, I was like you. I was not really a fan of his. I think that sometime, from what I was told, like around January or so, once he put on more strength, once he put on a kind of more of like a defensive mindset, I started to become a bigger fan of his. At the events like Hoop Summit and McDonald's All-America, he looked like genuinely among the best defensive prospects I've ever scouted in my life. He has those tools, and he seemed to finally have it click in terms of mentality that he can be that guy. So I understand the skepticism that people have for James Wiseman based off of the sample, because he's been a well-known prospect basically from like 2016 onward through now. But given that that sample wasn't super high, or given that we have a lot of sample of him being pretty questionable, I get why people are a little bit questionable of him, and I'm comfortable being maybe a little bit higher than some people are.
Yeah, that's fair, honestly, and he was impressive at the Hoop Summit, and I watched that game, and that was noticeably the best I've ever seen him play. I watched a game probably a week ago when he played prolific, I think in December, and if you would have dropped me into that game, and I would have known nothing about James Wiseman, there is no way I'd ever think this guy is a number one pick candidate. based on anything other than just being huge and being long. Like, there's nothing he did in that game that was suggestive of him being the number one pick. But like you said, that occurred in December. Like, if he's turned a corner defensively, like, maybe Hoop Summit indicated he was. And this is a very small sample for me, so I'm not going to speak to that. If he has done that, then I would be much more interested in him. But the guy I saw wasn't that physical. I think he kind of lost his head in this game a little bit. But offensively, this is a guy who plays like he thinks he's Kevin Durant. Yep. And, like, he's just taking a bunch of step-back long twos, and it's like, that's a problem.
I will even go a step further than that. I've asked him, like, who he models his offensive game after, and he's told me Giannis. And that is concerning. He's not that. He is, you know, like, to me, like, Miles Turner-y offensively. Because I do think he's going to be able to be, like, a pick-and-pop threat who can knock down shots from distance and, like, eventually iron out that consistency. But also, he's going to be best around the basket where he can be, like, a roll threat. Like, imagine, like, Miles Turner's shot paired with Clint Capella's, like, rim-running ability. I think that that's what his eventual offensive role is going to be once he figures out that he can't do this, like, two-dribble step-back bullshit.
Yeah, and I mean, his shooting percentages aren't very good as far as, like, free throw percentage. Like, when I've seen him shoot, like, he brings the ball over his head sometimes, and it's just, I don't know about the consistency. Like, Miles Turner was a good shooter even in college. So if he can get to that level, if he can show that touch, I get it. And I get why he's saying this stuff about Giannis and like players like that. He wants to be a perimeter big because that's what the league is coveting these days, is they want, you know, skills at that position. They want you to attack off the dribble, want you to space. So I get him having that approach to his game, but you still have to play like a big sometimes too. You can't just take step back twos, like long two fadeaways, when you're not that good of a shooter. You know what I mean? Like, you're just wasting your talent. Like, you still have to do big man things. And if he's going to do that inside and he's going to mix it up defensively, if he's going to protect the rim like he did at the Hoop Summit, then I will change course on him pretty quick. It's just from what I've seen. Like, I've seen some of Cole's play too at UIBL and stuff, and some of that was even questionable. Like, I think Cade Cunningham is clearly better than both of these guys. Like, he's the guy that I was like, guy's the fucking man. Yeah.
No, but,
like,
and even, we'll talk about Cade later on. Because Cade was at Nike Basketball Academy and he was a fucking stud.
Yeah, so he's like the guy that pops the most for me. I really like Cole, but even sometimes when I watch him, it's like he doesn't marry perfectly how to create, when to create for others, when to create for himself. He's still kind of learning that natural ability. But at least I saw the upside with him. You know, you could see why he'd be considered the number one pick, especially when you look at his stats too. Like, his shooting indicators are incredible. It doesn't look as good on film because he has that exaggerated left shot line, but he still brings it back to the center. His shot, I think, is bankable. So I at least got it with him. I got it with Anthony Edwards as far as the speed to power. He looks like 6'6", 230-pound Dennis Smith to me, as far as on the floor. Like, his explosion.
I will say he's like 6'4", 6'5". He's not that big.
Okay. Well, he looks like that on film, but maybe, like 6'4", 6'5". Just enormous. Like, his frame's incredible. He's super young. You saw him, you know, benching. I think Tom Crean tweeted that out the other day. He just looks massive. So I got the intent there. So if Wiseman's going to be more of this defensive guy now, if he's going to play more like a big, then I could probably turn the corner on him too. But I'm just pretty damn skeptical based on what I've seen.
Yeah, I think that's all reasonable. Let's talk about Cole. At this event, and I've seen Cole a lot. You know, I've seen him at McDonald's. I've seen him at Hoop Summit. I've seen him at EYBL events. Like, I've seen Cole live quite a bit now. And I have always been a lot more impressed than some other people are. Like, there are people who really question whether or not he is going to be an NBA lead guard. And I don't have those questions personally. Like, I think he is going to be, at the very least, like a league average starting NBA guard, because his ability to gain separation, his footwork is exceptional. The tightness of his handle is really good. He just understands how to play in pick and rolls already. I still think he's an underrated passer. Like, some people still question that ability of his. Like, you should have seen him at this event. Like, he was diming all sorts of guys, like, all over the court. Like, he was finding cutters with little pocket passes, finding rollers with little pocket passes. He has the Dame, like, sidestep, you know, jumper down now, where he can get a ton of separation on those. Ultimately, the biggest thing for me is, like, is he going to shoot it at a high level? He does have, like, the very short follow through, which is weird. He generally just kind of has short arms, which I think is going to lead to some interesting situations for him in general, in regard to, like, being able to get separation against elite level length. But, like, I think he is awesome. Like, to me, he is just very clearly a level ahead of, like, a lot of these guys in this class.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And when I say like blending the game, I'm talking about high level stuff, like a Trae Young or a Luka. Those guys just have a really innate ability to blend passing and scoring. And with Cole, it's a little bit more black and white to me, as far as like when he can do both really well. Like, I do think he's an underrated passer. He can make the reads, but it's just about blending that more consistently when you're on the floor. But that's more like ceiling level stuff, right? We're talking about like, I think he's going to be a lead guard. He has everything you look for. I mean, he's explosive. He good first step. He consistently beats his man. He has a good handle. I trust the pull-up game, even though, again, I think the only limitation is he doesn't have like a center shot line. So when he brings it up, it just kind of looks weird. Like if he brought it up more towards the inside of his body, I think it would be expedited and it would look a little bit better. His touch is good. I mean, you don't see guys that have his level of shooting inputs. Again, like looking at free throw percentage, EYBL in high school, he's like 88, 89%. Like, you don't see guys like that that don't shoot the ball at the next level. Like, I don't think that's ever been the case. It's really, really hard to shoot that well. So I'm not really worried about that. I think it's going to be dynamic. I think he's going to have, I guess, three-level scoring ability. He's one of the few guys in this class that really has that dynamic ability on the ball. Like, there's a ton of lead guards. They're not really like Cole, though. They're not that explosive. They lack a component. He has basically the entire package outside of, I would say, like, high-level decision-making.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, too. Like, this dude is kind of a motherfucker on the floor. Like, that kid plays hard as shit. He rebounds the ball really well for his position, despite being, like, 6'2". He, like, really gets after it. He dives on the floor, even in events like this. Defensively, he really kind of attacks at the point of attack. He's a really, really just well-rounded prospect, in my opinion. Like, I don't really get the concerns that people have, to be honest. Like, I think that, like, people are, like, questioning, like, is he going to have, like, an impact as great as Coby White this year? I don't even think it's going to be close. Like,
it's not going to be close.
He's going to blow what Coby White did this year out of the water. He's going to average, like, 20 points and 5 or 6 assists a game. And, you know, maybe it might not be, like, super high-level efficiency. But that dude's going to create all over the court in that open-floor offense.
Yeah. He's going to – if that's people's expectation, like, he might not even meet Coby White. He's going to blow the absolute fucking doors off of that. Like, he's going to be much better than Coby White. Like, there's not even a comparison at this level as far as their maturity, like, what they can do on the floor, athleticism. Like, Cole's slashing ability is legit. Like, he's going to get to the rim. And he's going to be able to finish around these guys. He's strong. I have a little bit of questions about the defense, more of like an effort thing. Doesn't have great length, but at least he's strong. And he's not really, really small. He's not like 5'11 or 6 foot. So that he has that going for him.
He's like built. He came in like almost around, he came in at almost 190 at this event.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot here. I mean, my differentiation, if you're calling him, I'm not saying you are, but maybe some people think that he's like a generational type prospect. I don't think he's that, but I think he's really good.
Right. No, I agree with you. Like, I don't think he is some like unbelievable lead guard prospect, but I do think that like he is very clearly at the top of the heap and like very clearly in the top tier of this draft. He's an awesome player in my opinion. He is just terrific. Let's talk about, is there anyone that interests you? I will say, let's start there. I asked you that question. I'll give you the next pick on who we talk about.
Let's do Scotty Lewis. This is someone who I haven't seen quite as much of. I've seen enough to know what he is. How did he shoot the ball here? What is his confidence level on his shot? Like, what's going on there?
So the shot is still coming along. It is more consistent in terms of trajectory from what I saw. Like, sometimes he would flatten it out a little bit. Sometimes it would be a little bit moonball-y. The trajectory on the shot and the arc looks a lot better now, but it's still not falling with like super high level consistency or anything. The bigger thing for me with Scotty on offense was like on Thursday when I was there, he was spazzy. Like he was trying to make too many things happen, turn the ball over, and you know, the handle wasn't as tight as what you were hoping for in tight spaces. He always defends super well. Like, it was hilarious. Like, he really got after it against dudes like DeMar DeRozan and Bradley Beal whenever he had to lock those guys up. And honestly, like, he did a really good job against those guys. They're playing at, like, 50%. They aren't going as hard as all these college kids are by any stretch of the imagination. And, like, Bradley Beal, for instance, was, like, kind of working on, like, a step-back jumper, right? But Scotty, like, really got after it. And, like, DeMar was having fun, like he was smiling the whole time. And Scotty and him were like going back and forth to the point where at the end of a game, DeMar DeRozan had a free throw to win it on Thursday. And I looked at Scotty because he was standing next to him on the line. I knew he was going to say something, and I couldn't hear what he said. But he very clearly said something to DeMar DeRozan that I don't know if it like got in DeMar's head. DeMar obviously wasn't like super locked in mentally or anything. But he said something. DeMar missed it. And he just looks back at Scotty and smiles. Like, he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, you got me. It's still more of like the idea behind Scotty Lewis as a prospect is more that he has this unbelievable athleticism and unbelievable length. He came in with a 7'1" wingspan. And then beyond that, it's that he is this like cult of personality. He is just infectious in a lot of ways. Like, he's great to be around. His teammates seem to like him. He actually got hurt on the last day of the camp on Friday. They had to like bring out a stretcher and stuff like for him. He tried to go up, and it was like a perfect microcosm of the Scotty Lewis experience. With like 10 minutes left in the camp, Sadiq Bey gets like this transition opportunity to dunk, and Scotty Lewis tries to chase him down for a blocked shot that he has like 10% of a chance of getting. And he like comes down hard on his neck and head, and he's fine. Like, everything is good. Like, he's only gonna miss, you know, like a week or two from what I understand. But it was just like the ultimate microcosm of how this dude just always plays hard. He defends his ass off. He has all of these tools. And I think that teammates are gonna love to be around him. But like, skill wise, there's a ways to go here still. Decision making, he can make really good passes, and he made a lot of great passes. And had like blew by some defenders pretty easily just due to his athleticism and his straight line. But there's still a, like, ways to go in terms of decision making, in terms of just tightening everything up offensively to where like he would be a pretty drastic negative in an NBA game right now offensively.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with him. Like, I love the fact he plays hard. He's super fast. Like, you notice him, like, at McDonald's, right when I started watching that game, you just notice his speed on the floor is, like, legitimately plus. Like, he's
an elite-level athlete.
Yes, and, like, I think he's not really a flash player because, again, you do see the consistency on defense with effort and stuff like that, but I think from an offensive standpoint, he's a little bit of a flash guy. Like, you'll see some highlight tapes where he'll have like a quick dribble spin move, and you'll see the athleticism. You're like, holy shit, why isn't this guy a top five pick? But when you watch him more, the consistency as far as his skill application just isn't there. He's going to have to shoot. We'll see how they handle his entire confines. Can he run a pick and roll? Hopefully he can answer some of these questions. Like, Florida's incredibly deep this year. They're going to be really, really good. I hope we see him in enough creation situations to where we can really analyze that aspect of his game.
Yeah, I've got Florida to win the national title at, like, I forget what the number is. It's something ridiculous. Like, it might be, like, 60-1. I am all in on the Florida Gators this year.
Yeah, I am too. And Scotty's not even my favorite prospect on the Gators. So, that's, like, I really like that team a lot.
Wait, who's your favorite prospect on Florida? Trey Mann?
Yes.
Explain.
You have to contextualize this and say I've only seen about a game and a half of AAU and a bunch of extended like 12-minute highlights, but like I probably saw 10 of them because I wrote a piece on him last week for the Stepien, ended up being about 20 minutes. I think this guy is incredibly skilled, and he doesn't get enough credit for that. I think he could be an elite shooter. I think we're talking about probably the second best pull-up shooter or the best pull-up shooter in this class. As far as quickness of release, I watch his game stylistically. He can dribble with either hand, really tight ball handling control. I think he's an underrated passer as far as making some kind of drop-off reads. He showed some creativity there. It's always hard to analyze decision-making in a very limited sample, so I'll hold off on that. But just from a shooting standpoint, this guy's like 30-foot range. He can shoot off the dribble, off the catch, off motion. He reminds me a lot of Darius Garland, frankly, stylistically, but he's a much better leaper. Like, he can actually get up and dunk. Like, Darius isn't doing that. So I look at that and I say, like, he's not even mocked in most sites. I don't know if that's because people don't expect him to be a one-and-done, but there's a lot of skill overlap with someone like Garland to me.
Yeah, so the question with Trey is, how much is he going to get a chance to be their lead guard this year because of Nembhard being there?
Yes.
I would venture Nembhard is probably their starting point guard. They could still run out lineups with, like, Nembhard, Trey Mann, Scotty Lewis, Keontae Johnson, and, like, Kerry Blackshear, right? They can run out lineups with one of those two, Scotty Lewis, Noah Locke, Keontae Johnson, Kerry Blackshear, or they can throw Kerry Blackshear at the four and play like Omar Payne at the five. They're a really fun team. Like, I think they're going to be awesome. I have them. They are a team that I have a financial interest in this year. So I am strongly looking forward to rooting for them.
Yeah, and again, this Trey thing is kind of like a little bit premature because it's based on a small sample, but I was blown away. Like, he's one of the guys where I watched and I was like, why isn't... It was the biggest gap between perception and what I actually value him as. Like, his skill level. I think he's going to surprise people. Like, he was doing, like, wrong foot, wrong hand finishes at McDonald's. Like, in skill practices, like, he turned the corner on, like, Mannion or Tyrese Maxey. And he was just showing, like, he could pass with both hands. It's just, I don't know. There's a lot more there. He has to get stronger. He's got kind of a thinner frame. You watch him next to Maxey, he's got those wider shoulders, and you're like, he's got to put on some weight. Like, from an explosion standpoint, he's not going to blow you away with first step. I think it's okay. He's quicker than he gets credit for, but not like, he's not Cole Anthony, obviously, as a slasher. So I want to see how he gets to the rim, how, like, what situations he's in. Can he finish at the rim? But his touch, from what I've seen, is really, really good. And again, we're talking about someone who's been like a high 80s free throw shooter, like over 36 from the 3-point line. And these aren't easy shots. Like, he's taken a ton of like really long shots in high school that I was seeing. So I'm really impressed. I think his skill level's up there at the top of this class.
All right. So let's just move to another freshman then. I think that it was the last freshman that was at this event. It is Khalil Whitney. So I've been a little bit more skeptical of where Whitney is in his development right now, just in general, right? Like, it's not that I don't understand the upside. Like, this is a kid that is a ridiculous athlete at 6'6" with a 7-foot wingspan. That'll play, right? But in terms of his overall skill level as a handler, as a shooter, I have pretty real questions. Do you have any preconceived thoughts about Khalil Whitney before I go into why I really liked him at this event?
No. I haven't seen as much of him outside, of course, of just the ridiculous dunks he has on, like, warm-ups and stuff. Like, he's a freak show, like, run and jump athlete, but I have not seen enough of his game to weigh in.
So here's what I will say. The freak show athleticism, like, plays up. Like, that dude is nasty as an athlete. He is, he looked more like an NBA wing than, like, Stanley Johnson out there, who was playing with them in these scrimmages, right? Like, and Stanley Johnson is well built. He is 6'5" with long arms and is like 240 pounds. Khalil Whitney is a big dude. And the explosiveness, it's just there, man. Like, it is readily apparent. He has it is like a first step in straight line drives. He has it exploding off of like 1 foot when he wants to going up for a dunk. It's all there, and the length is there. When he really wants to defensively, he can be a pest and a menace. Like, he was causing issues for DeMar DeRozan too, in a way that was surprising to me. Now, the shooting consistency is a real worry. He is not a great shooter yet. The mechanics aren't bad. He brings it a little bit too close to his face, I think. Brings it a little bit too close to his head, I would say, more than his face. He does have a high release point. But I also think that, like, the handle is a concern. He's really good in a straight line, but he doesn't have any real wiggle right now. Like, there's just not much there in terms of, you know, him being someone that can, you know, go right to left and get by a guy, right? And then additionally, whenever he gets, like, tight pressure at the point of attack, he can kind of, like, stumble with the ball in his hands a little bit. Having said that, he is, like, a... If it comes together this year at Kentucky, he's, like, an outside chance to be, like, a top five pick. Like, that dude has everything that you're looking for from a wing player in today's NBA. Like, there's a ways to go. And whenever I do my mock draft, he'll be at like 14, 13, something like that preseason. But if you told me that, like, he figured out the jump shot, he averaged 16 points a game, and is just like this total freak show athlete, 6'6 with a 7-foot wingspan, and NBA teams really buy into the projectability, I would not be surprised by that at all.
I mean, he definitely has that kind of athleticism. If it plays functionally on the floor, you're going to see the allure from teams. Like, how well does he know how to play basketball? Like, what's his feel level?
Yeah, it's hard to tell in events like that for sure. But, you know, his footwork is really good. He tends to make pretty good decisions. His big thing is that you could tell that there was a flip switched at one point where DeMar DeRozan, like, kind of pissed him off a little bit because he was like kind of toying with him on one possession, like trying to get separation from him. And Khalil, like, kind of blocked the shot and he just went, like, started yelling at him, like, not in this house and stuff like that. And DeMar's like laughing it off, like, again, not taking it super seriously. Like, I feel like a lot of this conversation has been me like shitting on DeMar DeRozan, and I don't mean it that way. DeMar was seriously like just out there to have fun. But like, After that moment, you saw Khalil go into like overdrive and really start to attack shit. Like he was really going at everyone on the floor. DeMar DeRozan got in front of him. He tried to drive DeMar and like posterize him angrily. He missed the dunk, but like that, it was just like a different level once he got it engaged. I would like to see that more. If he starts to like really engage and figure out, oh, holy shit, I am more athletic than everyone on the court, I can do this consistently, the sky genuinely is the limit. Like he has a real chance to be really, really good. But it a lot of it, I think, is mental.
How would you compare him to Precious Achiuwa?
I think Achiuwa is more of like a combo big who plays super hard, whereas yeah. Whitney is more of like a, like potentially even a true wing who can drive in a straight line, knock down shots, and be super athletic.
Can Whitney shoot off the dribble?
Yeah, he can get to his pull-up game. Like, it's okay. Like the rest of his shot, it's pretty inconsistent. But, like, the footwork to get into his pull-up game and the balance is not bad. But it's more the shot needs to improve.
Got it, yeah. I have to watch more on that. I'm just curious. If he's going to be, like, a pure wing, assuming he's not, like, a great passer, which I would have been told about by now, likely.
To be honest. Yeah.
So I think that you're looking for more of like a shot maker type to me if he's going to win offensively yes. in that role. I mean, of course, he can just be like a three. If he's really going to bring it defensively, he can just be a 3-and-D guy. But you want to see a little bit more than just a stationary jumper. You ideally want to see him be able to create some and face up like off a pull-up game of some sort.
Yeah, like if we're talking about him as a potential, you know, top 7 pick in the draft even, which again, like I'm not going to mock him there, but like I think that that ceiling at least exists. Like, that's sure. what you'll see. You'll see him, like, run off of screens and knock down shots or get to his pull-up game and, you know, knock down shots from the mid-range after a pump fake, right? Which he did, like, a couple of times at this camp. So the ceiling really is there. I was very intrigued by what I saw from Khalil Whitney at this camp. Like, he was there are questions, and I understand why there are questions, but the ceiling is drastic.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch. I'm going to finish up RJ Hampton tonight, and I'll probably move on to him next.
All right, who do you want to go to next?
Let's do Obi Toppin, just because, again, he has some fans in the draft community. What are your thoughts on him?
So, yeah, he was really good at this event. He was really, really good, especially on Thursday. Friday, okay. He fell off a little bit, but Thursday, he was really, really good, I thought. Really athletic, understood when to pop, when to roll. Sometimes that can be like a question. Really good out in transition, can run the floor super well. Great vertical athlete as well. Yes. Measurements were not great. I will say that, like 6'8 with a 6'10 wingspan. But I will say this. I'm not going to say who the player was, but a player who currently is in the NBA, after I questioned the measurements at the academy, jumped in my DMs and was like, dude, thank you for calling it out. Like, the measurements at this camp are kind of haphazard in comparison to other events like the combine and stuff like that. So I'm not saying like ignore them totally, but take them with a grain of salt whenever you see like Nefali Dante, who's been measured with a 7'4 wingspan, come in with like a 7'1 wingspan.
Yeah, and I'm not the best at spotting exact length on film and stuff, but Toppin does look longer than 6'10 to me. He looks more like 7 foot. Like he's sometimes not the most explosive, even though he is a good leaper, but he gets to the rim so quickly, I think, because he is longer too. So I would be surprised if it was 6'10. Like I maybe more 7 foot, 7'1 potentially.
Yeah, and you know, maybe he's like a little bit taller or something like that. Like I don't know. Because he came in at 6'8" here, and I'm unclear on if the measurements are in or with or without shoes. I think that I'm venturing without shoes, to be honest. Just because, like, you know, they seem to be like an inch short in most cases. But, you know, maybe he is like 6'9" with shoes on, like has a 7 foot wingspan or something like that. But this is not a guy that's going to be a center, I don't think. He's probably more of like a combo 4-5. And with that being the case, he's probably more of like a third big at the next level if he gets that far.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to. This is one of those things where in reality, what team is going to play him at the 5, at least start him there? And I don't think any would, from what I've seen, especially defensively. We're talking about a guy who doesn't block a ton of shots, not really an impediment at the rim. I haven't been in love with his help defense. We've talked about off-air, like some of his ability to drop and like quickly like drop his hips and slide quickly. Yeah. Like sometimes that drop step's a little clunky. So that's why I haven't been as high on him as some. I get the offensive upside. I do like him offensively. His finishing ability around the rim. Hopefully he shoots more threes this year so we get to see that played out. But I think I can bank on his shot reasonably well. It's fine enough to roll the dice on. I'm more concerned about him on the defensive end.
Yeah, the athleticism is there for sure. He is a good athlete. I would even say like a solidly above average athlete by NBA standards for a big. He is a really good shooter. Like I fully believe in the jump shot. That was like one thing that I think was questionable coming into the event for a lot of executives. He is a legit shooter. The way that like he would pick and pop and like take guys like Udoka Azubuike away from the basket and then just like confidently step into shots with ease. That is a good looking shot. It's good looking mechanically. It has great arc, great rotation. He's going to shoot it, I think. He's a really positive shooter, I think.
Yeah, I feel confident about it. I haven't seen enough to say if I'm like ultra confident, but I'm definitely think he can shoot. Like that's not really my hold up with him. I think he's going to surprise in that area, and I wouldn't be surprised honestly if he goes, you know, end of the first round in the draft. Like frankly, I think some teams will probably talk themselves into him with the athleticism, especially if he shoots the ball well this year.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that the defense is the real concern, if anything. Yeah. You know, I mentioned to you, like, there was a play that stood out in my mind where he did get caught in a switch against DeRozan. And DeRozan, again, like, at 50%, like, playing energy, really just, like, put the ball in his left hand and just, like, blew by toward the middle of the floor. And Toppin, it was tough for him to, like, really drop the hips and slide. He had to take that little, like, hop step. And by the time you take that, like, load step, it's just over with guys like DeMar DeRozan and with really any lead ball handler in the NBA.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm concerned. Like, he's going to have to win probably as a space defender, unless he's a much better help defender than I'm giving him credit for in my, like, two or three games that I've seen him. So I'm just a little... I'm always skeptical about fours that are going to be fours and not really fives who take something off the table defensively. Those guys just tend not to translate to the level that I like personally, but the NBA is going to covet those guys. Like, the NBA loves Kyle Kuzma, for example, and I don't think that what I might have seen here, he's not as good as Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Like, that his perimeter game is not the level that Kuzma's is.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Killian Tilly real quick. We finally got a semblance of measurements on Killian. Not great. 6'9.5" in terms of height, but he came in with a 6'7.5" wingspan. Let's even say that, you know, they were off by 3 inches even. We'll give him the Nafali Dante, you know, margin of error. Even at 6'10" wingspan, that is very concerning for me as a guy that probably would need to play some five to be like a real viable, interesting NBA prospect.
Yeah, I think that's fair, honestly. Yeah, I think the way he's going to win is more about IQ and like being in the right places defensively. And he's got good feet. Like, he can move in space. Like, he plays high in his stance, but he's got good agility there. So I'm not really that concerned about his length. Of course, you want to see it more like 6'11", 7 foot. It's a big problem because you probably go historically and look at how many fours have really translated with like a negative wingspan, and the list is going to be very, very few have been good. But I do think that this might make him a little bit of an inefficiency in the draft because I really do believe in his skill set, his ability to shoot the ball. I think he's a great shooter, and I like his skill level, and I like his defensive awareness. I think he's a really smart player. He can really pass, but his upside is going to be tapped because of lack of length. He's not going to be an impact defensive player. So I think you're going to see that. I do think the draft community might take it a little bit too far, though, because what he does well isn't really conditioned on length. It's just, again, it's hard to really buy in as him having a high ceiling because of the physical limitations.
Here's one place where I will disagree with you that his ceiling isn't based on his length, because one thing that he does do really, really well, and one place where he provides like real value that doesn't necessarily catch up in the stat sheet, is as a college rim protector. He's really, really good at using verticality and contesting guys at the basket. I do think that like he's an underrated athlete. You know, he comes from like a volleyball family, and I think that like that ability, like, I bet you when his standing vertical leap is measured, it is among the highest at the combine, because I do think he is very, very good at loading and using that like standstill leaping ability. But like at the end of the day, if you have a 6'9 wingspan and you're 6'9 in the NBA, you're probably not going to do much contesting shots at the basket. Like, just realistically, you're not.
Well, especially if I'm a standstill, I think that is going to kind of defensive role. Like, if he's going to be under the basket and going straight up, like, he's going to get exploded through regardless. Even if he had a 7-foot wingspan, he's not ultra strong. Like, he's going to get run through a fair amount. So I do think it definitely hinders him for sure, but I don't think it's like exponential. Like, he still wins on anticipation, on IQ, being in the right spot and like going vertical. So I don't think he's going to suffer to the extent of somebody who doesn't have those anticipation abilities. If you're just a guy who relies on tools and you take away your margin for error, you're going to have a lower ceiling. So I don't think it's going to impact him as much. But of course, again, you'd want to see more length. I mean, that's just, it's pretty unprecedented for a guy like that to get a shot in the NBA, a legitimate one. And he's going to be saved by his ability to shoot the ball. I think the NBA will eventually talk themselves into him, if the medical aligns, of course.
Yeah, so the medical is a real question after this past year. But the stuff that I noted, you know, he was knocking down above the break threes with ease. He's a really good communicator defensively out there. Moves his feet really well on defense, like you said. One like little note that I had, he struggled to catch the ball below his waist a little bit. Gonzaga's guards like never really utilize him as a, you know, rolling dive man where he has to catch the ball below his waist and like go up and finish. So it was interesting to me that his hands like there weren't superb. I will also just note, like, he's not a good rebounder at all. He gets out of position way too easily.
Yeah, and I think that also ties into, I don't think he's going to play much five credibly at the NBA level. I think you have to view him just through the prism of how NBA teams are going to view him more as a four. Like, I don't know if any teams, nobody's going to start him at the five. He might do some hybrid minutes there, but I don't know how you really survive defensively. It's just some of these guys who aren't ultra physical and can't rebound. I don't want to compare him to Dragan Bender and be like a lazy comp, but I'm just saying that a lot of coaches don't trust guys like that, you know, to be your primary rim protector and your primary kind of box out guy.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Where do we want to go next? Is there anyone else that like really interests you on this list?
I mean, Halliburton is definitely interesting to me. I'm not quite as high on him as some people are. I know you're really high on him, but maybe not even as high as some guys on draft.
I'm less high on him, I would say.
Okay, take it away.
I like the idea of him. So like there were people who had him like in the top 20 this year in terms of like draft ranking, which I thought was bananas. It was completely and utterly absurd. I had him at the highest this year, I think, as like a top 50 guy. That like I was like, you know, if he would enter the draft, I'd be interested in taking like a second round flyer. Like, I like him more than Talen Horton Tucker, who I had like at number 48 or something like that on my board. But like, you watch him and the lack of strength really does play up a lot.
Yes.
The lack of strength on the ball as well is concerning. He is not like some lead guard ball handler right now. He's a guy that gets by as like an advantage ball handler, who sees an advantage and then can just like drive by and get to the basket, right? Or like he'll pump fake on a jump shot and someone will respect the jumper too much and he'll just blow by. And he always makes great decisions. He's an exceptional passer. He's a really great defender. But the big key for me is that the jump shot is a mess. I know he hit 40% or whatever from three this year. I don't know what the number was off the top of my head, but like it takes him way too long to load into it. There's way too much offhand interaction in the shot. Like I don't really see how that shot is translatable to the NBA three without significant work right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you have to realize when you look at his three-point percentage or something in a small sample is you're not getting the diversity. Like, he didn't take any shots off movement. I think he made one pull-up shot his entire freshman year, and it was like a hoist. I'm writing a piece about him right now, and it was from almost half court. That's the thing about him that's kind of weird, is he has pretty good touch, I think. Yeah. Honestly, like, when he's open with time and space, like, he's a better, like, pure shooter than Lonzo, for example, I think. Like, when he has time and space, like, he's not as quick.
I don't think he's got better touch. For what it's worth.
I think Lonzo's shot is more functional, and we saw him do a lot more with it his freshman year at UCLA. But if you give them both an open catch and shoot, I would take Halliburton if it's open. But when you harass his shot line or anything like that, I feel like he can't make difficult shots. Even though we did see a couple shots at FIBA where Halliburton, he had like one mid-range fadeaway. I've never seen him do that. He made the shot. I don't know how much I buy that. And we did see one pull-up three, but it was one of those situations where it was like a Morant three, where it was like a way deep under coverage, and like you set your feet, right? And that's what you see a lot from Halliburton. It's like he's always setting his feet. He can speed it up a little bit, but it's still slow relative to NBA standards. Sometimes it just takes him all day to get it, and I think sometimes he takes liberties of taking his full amount of time when he can't expedite it. But you do see him under a little bit more pressure get it up quicker. But I completely agree with your overall assessment. I think the lack of strength on both sides of the ball, frankly. This is not somebody who gets to the rim. He didn't do that his freshman year either. He's someone who is, like you said, an advantage kind of creator. He's an excellent decision maker. I think a lot of people are going to call him a point guard. But in the NBA, you have to be able to score to be an on-ball presence. And that's where I worry with him. Not a dynamic pull-up shooter, not a dynamic get-to-the-rim guy, not physical at the rim, gets knocked out of spots way too easily. He's got a lot to show if he's going to be considered like this lead guard type.
Okay, so here are the numbers I will give you on why he's like 100% not a lead guard right now. He took 5 shots off the dribble all year last year. Made 1, as you mentioned. And last year, guess how many shots around the basket he took in half-court settings?
I actually know this. It was 14.
It was 14. That is, given the fact that he played 35 games last year, that's like 1 every 3 games. That's just like not... he's just not breaking down defenses in the slightest, if that's the number, realistically, right? And that shows up in his play. You know what I mean? Like, this is not breaking news. You know what I mean? You know, he made 1 3-pointer off of a screen last year, which I think that you mentioned as well. You know, as a pick-and-roll ball handler, he had 12 possessions last season. They had Lindell Wigginton. They had other lead ball handlers. Talen Horton-Tucker took a lot of possessions as well. This was just not a guy that was anything translatable as a lead. Now, I think of him more as a wing, and I always have thought of him more as a wing, who can be like a very high-level defender, who can hopefully improve the jump shot enough, and who can make exceptional decisions on the ball. Like, I think his ceiling is probably like late first-round pick. And if he became that, I wouldn't be shocked at all by that. But that's where I am in terms of, like, I'm, you know, quote-unquote, like, higher on Tyrese Halliburton. Like, I just like the IQ, like the ability on defense, and think like maybe there's a chance he can rework the shot.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am too, basically. I'm probably even a little bit lower on his defense. I love his team defense. I think he's really aware, and obviously he gets blocks and steals. Like, he can cover on the back line a little bit, but the strength, again, is concerned. He's got good feet. You saw him at FIBA at times. He'd get around screens, show good footwork there to stay attached. I was actually really impressed with that. But oftentimes you just see him get driven on in space, and he get knocked off a spot really easily. And that's the functional strength with him is definitely a concern. And just to put that 14 attempts at the rim in perspective, I wrote a piece about Isaiah Joe as well, and he never gets to the rim. He got to the rim 29 times in the half court. So it's like, this is an all-time kind of historically low number. And we talked about Halliburton on the podcast last year, and he kind of just reminds me of, like, in some ways, of the wing version of Lonzo. But we're talking about Lonzo, who's not even a lead guard in the NBA, and Halliburton has shown far less acuity there. So I think it's a big time leap to say, you know, this guy can be an NBA point guard. I think where you want him is more of an advantage scorer. Decision making is outstanding. Like, he can make all the reads in pick and roll. I have no qualms about that. He can see the entire floor. He can make all the passes. It's about, can he generate any self-gravity? And that's what I don't see as a score.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. All right, let's move on to, let's see, where do I want to go next? Let's talk about Mamadi Diakite.
Okay.
He has clearly done a lot of work this offseason, thinking he's going to play a bigger role offensively in Virginia's scheme, is a ball handler. Like, he can actually get into pull-up jumpers now with...
Okay.
I'm not going to say the results are great, but like, he gets into them with balance, and the key is more just like rhythm, right? He's a guy that clearly has not taken, I would guess, like any pull-up jumpers in his career at Virginia, and this is like a totally new skill. But his ability to handle it was far better, especially in the half court, than what I thought it would be. Like I said, like, he could go like left to right for like a pull-up shot. That, you know, he's just not like a good enough shooter right now. So the concern is, you know, can he be efficient enough doing this for it to be worthwhile? But there was genuine skill growth that I saw there that I became interested in over the course of the competition.
Yeah, I mean, if he's showing skill improvements, he becomes pretty interesting to me. I mean, right now, not getting a ton of buzz, even though he does have his fans in the draft community. I would be very intrigued if he starts showing skill level, because he has shown touch indicators. He did shoot 3 shots off the dribble last year. I'm guessing they were, one of them was probably like a runner or something like that, because they do kind of
right.
overextend into different categories. But if he starts showing skill in his game, you bet on the shot to a reasonable extent. Like he doesn't have bad touch. I think there's a workable skill set here.
Yeah, and look, like, he still never passes the ball. And he is, he has the chronic disease where he holds the ball too long instead of just making, like, a quick decision and keeping the defense on its toes yeah. is a big man. But I'm just saying, like, there is potentially some dormant ball skill there, which is intriguing, especially when you consider the fact that, like, he is a fucking high level defender. Like, he can yeah. switch out onto guards. He's a good rim protector. Like, he can be Kevon Looney defensively, I think, at the next level. I don't think he has Kevon's ball skills quite yet. And I think what Kevon has done is he's become, like, the most unselfish guy in the world offensively, right? So that's where Diakite's next step is, developing ball skills to at least be, like, a threat, but also understanding not to use them unless he absolutely has to. I think he's like an interesting second round pick right now, that like in the 2020 draft, I would not be surprised to see him go in the second round.
Yeah, I'm with that 100%.
Yeah. Like, and like, seriously, the shot mechanics off the catch, I think are actually pretty good. Like, I think he has a real chance to shoot it from like 18 feet.
Yeah. And if he, I mean, obviously you want to extend that to 3 and then he becomes much more viable. But this is the kind of player I like betting on more, because you're getting the defensive ability and not like the heaviest guy as far as girth, of course. But like, I think I would rather bet on someone who can be a multi-level defensive player who has touch indicators than more of an offensive oriented 4, if that makes sense. Yeah.
So Sadiq Bey at Villanova, 6'7", 6'11 wingspan, you know, pretty smart player, fits Villanova's scheme really well.
Yep.
He is shooting it now. Like, he has, like, mechanically, I don't know if this is new or not, I just didn't dig deep enough into his, like, shot mechanics last year, but he's kind of turning his feet to a slight angle from the basket as opposed to, like, being straight on with the basket. And okay. it's kind of put his alignment a little bit more in alignment, I guess, with, like, just getting a good release on the ball. He was knocking down shots like crazy at this event. He looked really, really good.
Okay. I was already interested. I really liked him last year. I don't have specific notes on his mechanics either. I did take notes on him last year, but I did like his IQ, and I think his frame yeah. and that size, he becomes really interesting, especially he gets the J-Wright boost of, you know, he's going to learn fundamentals and like attacking quickly, making quick decisions and footwork and all of that. So he's definitely someone to monitor, someone who some people were high on last year. I'm very, very intrigued by him.
Oh, we need to talk about Jaden Scrubb, too. Have you by chance watched any of him? So he's a kid that played JUCO last year at John Logan College. He'll be a sophomore this year. There's like a question as to whether or not he's going to declare for the 2020 draft, or if he's going to transfer up after the second JUCO year to a Division I school. 6'5", 6'10 wingspan. Lefty, knocked down like 45% from 3 last year. I think it was like his numbers were absurd. They were like 25 points, 7 rebounds, and 7 assists a game or something ridiculous like that. He very much looks the part of a prospect, and I am very interested in him now going forward and getting to see a little bit more of him. This is the first time I'd ever seen him live, and I get the appeal. And like, he was certainly in the top half of players that were at this event, if not higher.
Interesting. Yeah, this is someone I haven't seen literally a second of, so I can't say much here.
Yeah, he very interesting, very, very interesting story. I might write about him at some point, but he's very good, very very smart player, makes the right decisions with the ball. The jumper, I don't think, is like quite like, you know, 45% from 3. Like, it's not going to be some, he's not going to be like some elite level shooter, I don't think. But mechanically, it does look pretty good. Like, he can be a good shooter. In general, I'm intrigued. I am intrigued to see where this goes more than anything now.
Yeah, and I'm excited to get to that tape. Probably not this week, but I'll try to build that in. I got to ask, though, about one guy. We got to talk about Charles Bassey. Just the two guys that have applicability in next year's draft. Is it Kira Lewis or Kyra Lewis?
Fuck if I know.
Okay. So those two guys, take it away. I'm curious on both. I think like the listeners are going to want to hear about guys who are more. I would say both of these guys are threats to come out in the next class. I mean, obviously, Lewis wasn't eligible to do so last year, but what are your thoughts on those guys?
Yeah, so Kira, let's call him Lewis, I guess, because I don't know if I'm saying his name
yes.
right. Lewis, I only saw him one day. You know, he's had like a long, same with like Cade Cunningham, same with Tyrese Haliburton, like, these guys have had long summers already, just from playing the, you know, U19 championships. Lewis looked good. He looked like he was knocking down shots. He is super fast. He's very good at leading the transition. Yes. Good ball handler. Very skinny still. Like, he is painfully skinny right now. That he needs to put on like 10 to 15 pounds before this college basketball season, even, I think, to like really get to the point where I think he can do significant damage in college, like not just be like probably all SEC. I think he's going to do that regardless. The big question for me is, can he be like SEC player of the year candidate? And like, if he puts on like 10 to 15 pounds before the season and gets up to like 175, he has a real shot. Like, he is such a quick talent. He can knock down shots. His passing ability is pretty strong. I am, in general, a fan and think he has a chance to go in the first.
Yeah, I get the intrigue with him. I mean, the speed with the ball is something that really stands out. Like, when he actually gets the ball and pushes it down your throat in transition, like, he can even elevate off one and finish at the rim. Like, he's not, like, an overly explosive guy, but he's explosive enough. And I think his transition ability and his speed is what really stuck out to me. I didn't really see enough of the change of speed. I watched, like, three games of his last year, the Kentucky one most recently, and you could just tell he wasn't ready. Like, he was just not at that point where he was old enough. He was, I think, the second youngest player in college last year, and it was just the level was too high for him. So I'm very curious to see how he kind of adjusts this year, going to have the ball a little bit more, going to be potentially in a better system to showcase his talent, better situation. So we'll kind of see how that plays out. Someone who should definitely be on the radar, though. I'm not quite as high on him as some, but I do get the intrigue because I do buy a shot, especially off the catch. I'm not sure how dynamic his pull-up game is yet. I haven't seen enough of his tape there, but I do like his shot off the catch.
Yeah, I'm going to start with him as a like late first round pick, probably something like that, and just, you know, see where it goes. This year is such a crapshoot. Like, he's, to me, like, in terms of upside, at least, he is someone that I am very interested in as soon as he puts weight on the body.
So transition now to someone you're not very interested in. What are your thoughts on Charles Bassey? Anything changed for you?
No, I was never really a fan. He looks slow. He doesn't have quick twitch. One thing that like a coach told me that played them last year is that he kind of has like the twinkle toes disease. He just doesn't roll hard, right? Like, you know, there are guys like Clint Capella, for instance, and, you know, Tyson Chandler, when he was really good at the pick and roll, they would roll hard to the basket. Same with DeAndre Jordan, right? High point the ball and then like finish far above the rim and like throw down on dudes' faces. Charles Bassey doesn't really do that. And then you throw in the fact that, like, he doesn't have great balance, it seems like. Like, he's on the floor constantly. He's strong and, like, a good college player, for sure, because he has touch. He has, like, pretty good footwork in the post. Just for, like, that's a skill that's been developed within him over the course of the last, like, 3 years. He's a really good rebounder who understands innately how to high point the ball. But, like, a lot of the stuff that he does doesn't impact winning, and a lot of his shortcomings drastically impact losing.
Yeah, that's really well said. That's pretty much my thoughts verbatim on him. I can't get there defensively. I don't think he's going to defend in space. This movement, like, fluidity as an athlete just isn't there. The reason, like, I don't think he can get up and like sky for dunks on like lob catches, he's just not that kind of a coordinated athlete. Like, he's more of like a guy. I do buy him in some coordination ways. Like, I do think that he's inevitably going to shoot, and I think he can maybe 1-2 dribble, even like shoot a pull-up jumper potentially. Like, his skill level, I think, is underrated. But I'm not sure if it's not near the level of what it needs to be to compensate for his areas of weakness, which are, in my opinion, like you said, far more important to his projection. And I just don't see how, you know, he survives, especially defensively. I get the age and I get the production, but that doesn't always equate to being a plus NBA player if you're a great college player. And I don't think he's even a great college player. He's a very good one, though, and I think he will be a good one.
I am way more interested in Udoka Azubuike than I am Charles Bassey. And I am, like, people who are fans of Kansas fucking hate me because I am not, I have like not been high on Doak, and I'm not super high on Silvio De Sousa. Doak, he is in exceptional shape. Like, he came in at 276 pounds. He had a full six-pack, was in, like, awesome, awesome shape while he was at this event. And, like, it showed. He was, like, rim-running and doing an exceptional job in pick-and-roll settings at this event. He, like, it was difficult for teams to stop him. And, look, like, we're not exactly talking about the most complicated structured defensive schemes where the backside defender is tagging him consistently. But he was really good. Like, he was really, really good on offense at this event.
I mean, he's a legitimate play finisher. I mean, around the rim, he finishes everything. And he's explosive enough to dunk, and, like, he has some touch around the basket, not from the foul line or anything like that, but just around the rim, as far as his ability to put pressure on the rim vertically with his size, with his extension, he's going to be up there. And I think he probably even gets drafted, frankly, just based on that. Like, you know what you're getting with him. He can set a good screen, and he can roll to the rim. And I think he's a really big threat around the basket to be an interior finisher, and that's what he does.
The problem with him is that I think it's going to be hard to keep him on the floor because of the lack of foul shooting and because of the lack of perimeter defense. He is a disaster still as a foul shooter and a disaster still as a defender on the perimeter. Like, he can't do anything to stop those guys out there. Maybe you can do some structural things defensively to, like, mitigate that downside. But a team with a pull-up shooter and a team with a pop threat are just going to murder him when he's on the floor in the NBA.
And that's why I'm not as high on him, because of those two components. He's got to look good in, like, Summer League, for example, when teams just park their big right in front of the rim and, like, oh, you're going to play a drop every time. But in the NBA, especially against the better teams who have legitimate pull-up threats and perimeter players, you can't get away with that.
Yeah, like, I applaud him for doing genuinely every single thing that he can possibly do to become an NBA prospect. I just don't know if it's there at the end of the day. But he is...
Yeah.
He's working hard at it. Like, I'll give him that. I'm hoping that he gets there. Do you want to talk about... So, I'm trying to think if there's anyone else on the college side. When you talk about Cassius Winston, looked like we expect him to. Oh, Oshea Agbaji looked great. He was, like, knocking down shots. He came in, like, strong and heavy. He looked like a potential NBA win out there.
At times last year, I thought he was Kansas's best prospect, frankly. Yeah. Even, like, with Grimes on the floor, I thought, like, this guy was probably their best prospect. I wasn't really as in on him yet, but you get the allure. If he's going to make shots, he has to shoot. That's step one. So if he can prove that and then show a little bit more diverse skill set. But I did like some of his tape last year. I thought he was intriguing.
Yeah, and like, I don't think Peyton Pritchard's an NBA prospect, but I thought Peyton Pritchard looked really good. Throughout, like, he looked like a mature adult guard out there in chaos. Desmond Bane was automatic, knocking down shots from distance. He's still 6'4 with a 6'4 wingspan and has really funky shooting mechanics. But, you know, as a wing who can knock down shots, maybe that happens for him. Tanner Engom, you know, 7'1", 7'5" wingspan, something like that. Not really a prospect to me. Trace Tinkle showed some flashes. He came in 6'6 with, like, a 7-foot wingspan, by the way. Which, okay. Like, if you look at him, like, he does actually have, like, pretty long arms. If he can shoot the three at all, and he didn't look like he could shoot the three at this event, he's intriguing to me just because his feel for the game is really high. And then finally, you've watched a good amount of Reggie Perry now because you watched all of the U19 stuff. What did you think of Reggie Perry?
I mean, he got to show a little bit more of his skill game and a little bit more of the perimeter ability in FIBA play. I just thought he looked coordinated running the floor, had some nice handling sequences, shooting. I buy his foundation to an extent. I think he's fine there. It's more to me about, can he defend in space? He had some problems with pick and roll coverage. I can't remember what team, but, like, USA was that. This was the only time they were really struggling in the tournament to a high degree, and they were just getting pulled out in the floor because their bigs couldn't guard in space. And that's something I worry about him. His ability to protect the rim as well on the back line, not the best vertical leaper. He doesn't have a lot of pop to his game in that respect. Yep. But there are several components that he's interesting. I'm probably a little bit lower than some, but I get the intrigue. I think you were relatively high on him, right? You at least like him.
I was high coming in to his freshman year on him. Like, I thought he was like an immediate impact college player. It took him like 12 games, but he was really good the back half of his season with Mississippi State. He was good at the G League combine. He was pretty good at the NBA combine. Obviously won MVP of the U19. I think he's going to produce basically wherever he goes. There's still concerns about him as a, like, combo 4-5 big man, as opposed to being just like a true five. But he's strong. He's physical. He is a good rebounder. I think he's better positionally defensively than he gets credit for. He's not going to be like some difference maker defensively, but I think he can be like a tough guy on defense.
Sure. Yeah. The strength is there. The frame. I think he profiles best as kind of this third big, ideally, if he makes it to that level. That's kind of what he does. I don't see him being dynamic enough as a four either on either side of the floor, and I don't think he's big enough that coaches are going to trust him to play the five. But he does give you some different dimensions if his shot proves to be like legitimately bankable.
Yeah, like second round pick for me. Not a guy that like I'm anticipating taking some big first round pick leap. Let's talk about Nafali Dante. Have you seen any of him?
I haven't in a long time. Like, I did see him at Hoop Summit. I think he was there two consecutive years, but I haven't really seen him in an intermittent level. I probably haven't watched his tape for a year and a half.
So Nafali Dante is headed to Oregon now. He is going to reclassify to 2019 as well. So he'll be, I would imagine, like he would prefer to be in this draft. I personally don't really see it with him. Whenever I watch Dante, I see a guy that has like NBA long-term potential. Maybe if you told me in a few years like he was a NBA prospect, I would buy that, but he's still very limited. He still doesn't make the right rotations defensively. He's improved a lot. He's improved his body a lot. I think like he was down to 240 at this event, which was really good. But he's still just like a finisher and like a rebounder to me, and that's kind of it. Like, I don't get why he's like a top 10 prospect in this recruiting class.
I really have to go back over. From what I remember of him, I just remember him playing against Charles Bassey, like at Hoop Summit practices and stuff. And I just wasn't really impressed with either one of them. I think Kofi Cockburn ended up showing up there that year. So he never popped for me in that setting. Like, I was obviously fixating on other guys more clearly. So that's why my memory of him is kind of a bit hazed here. But I was never blown away by him.
Yeah. Like, he's just not a guy that seems to have, like, a super high feel for the game to me. And, like, offensively, like, I don't even, like, he's not even, like, a great roller. He's a guy that, like, gets his offense, like, from offensive rebounding and just, like, getting, like, a dump-off pass from a driving guard. He's just not, like, one of those guys that puts, like, a crazy amount of pressure on the basket in the same way that Bassey doesn't. And yeah, defensively, like, I think he's a little bit overrated defensively because he blocks shots. Like, he's not always there defensively in a way that he needs to be. There was like a conversation earlier, like, does he like totally change Oregon's hopes this year? I don't think he does. Like, he helps Oregon, but like, if I was them, I would venture that their best lineups don't involve Nafali Dante.
Yeah, interesting.
CJ Walker is just better than he is at basketball.
For sure. I've seen enough of CJ to know that.
Yeah, it's like CJ Walker is just better at basketball than that dude is. Given that you haven't seen a lot of him, I figured I'd just like throw off some takes real quick about Nafali Dante, given that he's going to Oregon and that was a thing that was announced. He's like, I don't mean to like shit on him. Like, he's fine. He'll be like an okay prospect, but at the end of the day, I don't see him as like some one and done dude at all. Let's talk about, have you seen any of Imani Bates? This was my first like in-person experience with Imani Bates.
I've only seen like extended highlights, so nothing of like in-game like feel level and stuff, but I know what he can do as far as skill level.
Yeah, so Imani Bates, first and foremost, the one place where we very clearly need to pump the brakes on the Kevin Durant comparison is Kevin Durant was like 6'9", 6'10", with like a plus 7 wingspan. Imani Bates came into this event 6'7", with a 6'7" wingspan. Now, that's not to say that he isn't very clearly the best player in his class. He is fucking exceptional. Exceptional. I don't know how to make that work. That dude is an unbelievable shot creator. He's still super skinny, but he is, he can go like left to right crossover, three pointer splash. Like, he can knock down shots from distance. He's a three level scorer that knows how to, create separation despite being super skinny still. He uses his length that he has really, really well, but I don't see the Kevin Durant stuff. Yeah, like, he's really good and is very clearly a number one player in that class, and I would be surprised if he is not like the number one overall pick in the 2023 NBA draft, 2022 NBA draft, I think, now that I think about it. But yeah, like, he's really exceptionally good, and he was among the best players here, I would say. Like, he wasn't, like, he was probably the third best player on his team, fourth best player on his team behind, you know, I thought Josh Christopher was really good. Paulo Banchero is one of my favorite players in high school basketball right now. That dude is just exceptional. And then Patrick Baldwin looked really good as well. But the fact that he's a just like finished his freshman year and is at this level already, I think says a lot about just how unbelievably gifted he is.
The pull up and like getting from his handle to his pull up game at that size is pretty special. I mean,
yeah,
I don't really care what, especially when you factor in age. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen someone at that age.
It's special for like a college player.
Yes. But especially with how young he is. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen a prospect. I mean, I'm sure Durant did this. I don't really remember that. But a guy who could really shoot off the dribble like him at that size. And yeah, if he's not Kevin Durant, if he's not, you know, Durant's probably like 6'10", 6'11", with a 7'5", right. 7'6.5" wingspan. He can just shoot over the top of everybody, right? Maybe Amani can't do it to that level, but that doesn't make him like a bad prospect. Clearly, everybody still thinks he's great. One of the guys who I don't know about feel for the game. I haven't seen enough of him to know that, but he's one of the guys where he's probably going to be a good enough shot maker where it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, no, like Amani Bates is still like one of the best prospects, if not the best prospect in high school basketball. I'm just saying, like, you know, Jeff Borzello, who I love, like, I love Jeff, you know, consider him a friend, but like he wrote like this thing where he talked to a bunch of evaluators and asked like, is Amani Bates the best prospect since the one and done era, basically. And these people came back and were like, yeah, he's like up there with Kevin Durant. He'd be like behind Durant, behind Greg Oden, then like slot in at third with Derrick Rose or something like that. And I think we need to just slow down a little bit. Like, I'm good with the hype on him because he is unbelievable. But like, the lack of freak show measurements actually is important to his long-term upside.
I agree. And if that's the bar, then I would side with you. I mean, I'm tend to be more skeptical of coming in to this being like he's in that Durant conversation as far as a one and done, like that level of talent. Let's at least let him prove it first. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, more substantially over time before you bestow on him like basically the best prospect of the last like 20 years. Like, is he a better prospect than Zion? Like, let's chill a little bit.
Yeah. I really like Paulo Banchero, or Banchero. He's from Seattle,
O'Day, right?
So I assume you've seen him quite a bit, right?
I haven't seen him that much. He's O'Day High School, though. I want to say I played against his older brother. There's another Banchero when I was in high school. I'm not sure if that's the case or not, but I've heard great things about him. I've seen the highlight tapes, and I'm very, very interested in him for sure.
The things that he does super well don't even really show up in highlight tapes. He is like just one of the smartest high school basketball players I've ever seen.
Yep. You can see that from some of the tapes too, like some of the passes he makes and some of the leads. Like, you can't see everything, of course, but even I could see that in a limited sample, so that was really encouraging.
Yeah, like the possession by possession consistency that he brings is just really high. Patrick Baldwin is, I don't know if he's the best like big shooter I've seen in high school basketball. And look, I've been doing this, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I have like an Evan Daniels like encyclopedia of recruits, right? But like among five-star prospects who were like, you know, 6'10", something like that, 6'9", 6'10", I personally can't remember a guy who is as good of a shooter as Patrick Baldwin, especially as like a, you know, rising junior. He is an unbelievable shooter.
That's definitely promising. This is someone who I haven't seen any of, unfortunately, yeah, so I can't really chime in.
He is like, if you told me he won a three-point contest in the NBA one day, I would not be surprised.
Oh, Jesus.
Level
at 6'10"?
Yeah, like 6'9", 6'10".
Can he guard?
He has a high IQ, but we will see where the defense goes. He's not like overly long or overly athletic.
But he's smart.
But he's smart. He can put the ball on the floor, drive, knows how to use his shot to get into the lane. It's like he's the number one or number, he's like a top three prospect in the 2021 class.
Yeah.
I don't know that the upside is like superstar level player, but in just purely in terms of the jump shot, he is an exceptional jump shot.
Okay.
Can do it off of movement. Like, can do it. He can get like that. He can knock down shots like with terrific touch whenever he gets that, like running off of movement, gets the slight lean backward to create separation, but also somehow maintain perfect balance and alignment in the shot, like stuff.
So are we talking like a Lauri Markkanen level shooter with more diversity potentially? Is that?
I think it's like that level. Yeah. He's okay. Like, he is an unreal shooter.
That's dope.
Yeah. I would watch him. I didn't get a chance to see much of the team that had Scotty Barnes and Terrence Clark and Sharif Cooper. I did get to see the Greg Brown team. Greg Brown and Cade Cunningham and BJ Boston, like all those guys. Greg Brown is a ridiculous athlete. That dude is a freak show, like a total freak show.
Another guy I have not seen much of outside of like FIBA play. I watched a lot of Cade on purpose because I love watching him play. But outside of him, I think he's my favorite prospect ever. I'm not saying he's the best, but I love watching him the most. Like, I love watching that kid.
I saw him for the first time at Pangos last year. And I wrote about how I thought he was like a way underrated prospect and like looked like an NBA wing out there already. The fact that the Cade Cunningham explosion has happened makes me very happy.
I don't even know where to start with him. I think it's first of all, like the basketball IQ and like the savvy at that age is just like
off the charts.
I literally put like a random high school game on and I was like, who the fuck? I've never had any pre-existing context to him. It just happened like somehow randomly. I saw him and I was like, who the fuck is that guy? Like, nobody makes reads that quickly that's that size. Like, he was throwing like these off-angled entry passes and pick and roll. It was just like, he just feels the game. He sees the game. He's a step ahead. That's the best way I can explain him. At 6'7", like that IQ level is just very, very rare. I would imagine, I didn't watch a lot of Ben Simmons, and there were clearly differences in their games, but I'd imagine, like, when you watch them play from an IQ standpoint at lower level high school, like, those guys really, really stand out.
Yeah, like, for instance, Ben was, like, 4 inches taller, obviously, 3 inches taller, and was way more explosive athletically, I thought. I think Cade's IQ is higher, and I think Cade has already like a way better jump shot. Like, I'm not sitting here and saying he's like some high level shooter, but he is a better shooter than Ben already.
Oh, 100%. Like, I actually think his shooting is being underrated a lot. Like, he's not like a great percentage shooter, but his mechanics are actually really good. And I'm really optimistic about that translating just because he has that kind of high forehead release where he can shoot over the top. He's shown some diversity off the dribble. I don't know how well he can shoot like deep NBA threes yet. He's more like at the line from what I've seen, but the foundation is incredibly strong. He's not someone who has like one of these situations like LaMelo Ball where this mechanics just piss me off. And like, they're just so inconsistent. Like with Cade, I do think the mechanical foundation is there. And if he can really shoot the ball, I mean, I love his strength level. He's not like the most explosive athlete in traffic, but he does. I think it was Matt McKay who made this comparison. He does remind me a lot of Brandon Roy.
Yeah. Like, there is some of that there, except that Cade is 6'6". He came in with a 7-foot wingspan.
I thought it was measured even above that. Didn't somebody have it at like 7'2" or something crazy? Or
it was, it's 7 foot. 0.25.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. He is everything you want from a prospect. He would, like, it is shocking to me that he is not trying to reclassify for this year.
I'm heartbroken. I would have had him. If he reclassified, he would be one in his own tier for you, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, he'd be very clearly number one for me.
Yeah, me too.
He is a full stop stud. The fact that, like, it's weird to me that recruiting, like, have recruiting analysts jumped on this yet? And, like, do they have Cade that high? I feel like they don't.
I don't know for sure. I saw one ranking where he was second, but I don't really follow the stuff that far ahead. Like, it does seem like he hasn't gotten, I don't know, because, again, this is someone who, like, everybody that I roll with is obsessed with. So I'm getting, like, the extreme of one side. And then I don't see that being purported to the same extent by a lot of guys who cover high school. And I think a lot of that, again, is like you said, like, you don't have like the crazy highlight flash finishes where he's like ultra explosive in traffic or something. Like, he wins more in like the skill and IQ game. And I think sometimes those guys get a little underrated.
Yeah, like, he's the number two prospect right now behind Evan Mobley in 2020. And
yes,
I think Evan's a stud. Like, I think Evan is good. Super good. And I think that, like, Evan is, like, I think Evan would be number one in the 2019 class in terms of recruits. Like, I think he's better than James Wiseman right now.
I agree.
Having said that, like, Cade is very clearly better than his now. Like, we just kind of hit that point where Cade is better than he is.
That's my opinion as well. I've seen both of those guys with FIBA play, and I do like Evan. I like some of the passes. I like the shot foundation. There's a lot of like IQ stuff in his game too. If he can just get stronger, I think that's the main thing with him, is he's just real thin. There's a lot to like with him. I really do like him a lot. But Cade, to me, again, I don't want to use this too liberally, but he is more like a generational kind of prospect to me. Like, I'm almost to the point where I'm like very confident saying that. I'm not saying he's for sure going to be like a superstar, but there's almost everything that I like in a player in that guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as like generational prospect. Like, I don't, like, I would not put him in Zion's class at all, but I do think he is a ridiculously high level prospect. I am excited.
I think I would put him in Zion's class, but I think I'd still have Zion ahead, if that makes sense. Like, I think he's in the stratosphere, but I think right now, I mean, obviously he's going to show more and we'll see how high the shooting ceiling goes and stuff like that. But I think they're in the same, like, for me, it's like Luka, Zion, and Cade would probably be the three guys over the last few years that I feel like are on that level to varying degrees.
Yeah, that's fair. Anything else you want to talk about from this event?
I think that's good, man. Honestly, I know most of the returning guys here, you answered pretty much all the questions. I couldn't really chime in on some of these guys, but I was kind of, I shouldn't be surprised that we're trying to fill content and we're after the hour 30 mark. So
yeah, we're rolling. And we still have to make fun of Michael Porter for...
Oh, there we go.
Like, what the fuck are you thinking, Michael Porter? I have so many, so many questions right now. Michael Porter tweeted at, Snapchatted Adam Silver, like, giving them a speech at the rookie symposium thing. And it eludes me. A, why are you Snapchatting at this thing? Because, like, it's going to be very rare for you to get a chance to, like, see Adam Silver, you know, speaking in front of all of you like this again. B, his phone information is bigger on the screen than Adam is. Like, could not be more obvious that Adam is explaining to them, if you have any questions, please, like, reach out to me. Here are my things. And that's what Michael Porter decides to Snapchat. And what? Like, I have so many questions on what the thought process was going through his brain.
Yeah. I mean, I have questions. I'm not sure if I actually want to hear the answers necessarily, but it's just crazy. Like, it's crazy where we've come with Michael Porter, where he'll like pop on my radar, like, it seems like once every like 4 months. Like, there were times last season where I legitimately forgot he was drafted. He was like in the league, he was in that draft, and you know, he popped up a little bit with summer league because we thought he was going to play, and then he ended up not playing, and then this is the next thing. The next time I've thought about Michael Porter was this. It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah, Michael has got to get his shit together. Like, yeah. On some level, like, this is a jokey, funny thing that, like, it's pretty objectively hilarious that he did this. But come on, man, like, handle your shit. Like, please, just handle your shit.
Yeah, I really have nothing else. We'll see how it goes.
What a move to just tweet out all of Adam Silver's information. Jason Concepcion has already tried to reach out to get him on desktop. Hopefully Adam takes kindly to that and responds. Go on desktop, Adam Silver, please. Is there anything else you want to talk about? I think that's all we got basketball-wise, and we talked about movies at the top, so.
I think I'm good, man. Honestly, just a couple things to plug really quick. I talked about Trey Mann and wrote a piece about him last week at the Stepien, so you can check that out. I'm going to write about Tyrese Haliburton this week and kind of just comparing what we saw, a lot of what we discussed in this podcast, and comparing what we saw on FIBA, any developments in his game. Also wrote about Isaiah Joe, if you want to check that out as well, and continue to listen to this podcast, even in the downtime, because as you can see, we still come up with things to talk about.
Go to the Stepien, go to The Athletic, go subscribe to The Athletic, keep me employed. I wrote about the Rich Paul rule, as we talked about on the last podcast with Dieter. Rich Paul then came and did an op-ed for us, which then led to the NCAA deciding to reverse the Rich Paul rule because they are just a bunch of nincompoops. Like, that's what the NCAA is. The NCAA stands for nincompoop. That's where we're at this stage. Go subscribe to this podcast. You can leave a rating, leave a review. Let's take a quick look down review lane and see what we got here, Cole. I'm sure that we've got some just beautiful, beautiful ones here. Let's see. Trey for MVP on August 11th gave us this beautiful five-star review. This is probably the most informative basketball pod on the market. Cole and Sam really are the best in the business, and unlike most in the media, are willing to say when they were mistaken about prospects. That all being said, if I have to hear one more word about baseball, I'll drive off a cliff. I like to live in a world where I can pretend that sorry excuse for a sport doesn't exist, stick to basketball movies and anything else besides America's favorite ass time. Shout out to you, Trey, for MVP. I love that review so much.
That's incredibly my brand, too, because I don't know jack shit about baseball. I don't watch baseball. I kind of confine myself to basketball and occasionally movie discussions. I can talk about the NFL a little bit, but baseball, I just can't do it.
Just wait until we start making this an Australian football podcast, because, oh boy, it's coming in the next couple weeks. I'm actually, so it's funny, I'm going to be on my honeymoon. We're going to pre-record some podcasts for me to potentially release during the honeymoon. We'll see. I've been subtly informed that I am not allowed to take my laptop on the honeymoon for reasons that are very valid and accurate, and I should never, ever do that. So maybe I'll have someone else post the podcast at some point. But we'll have some content over the course of the next 3 weeks, because I get married here in like 11 days, and then after that, you know, go directly on the honeymoon and won't be back until mid-September. I'm sorry.
December. Jesus. No,
mid-September. So, we'll just keep it locked here. I'm sure that we'll inform you what's going on with the podcast, but, until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.